Vishnu Sahasranam name 161. Sarga. Sarga. Does anyone know what this means? Anyone? Sagar means ocean. This is Sarga. S-A-R-G-A. S-A-G-A-R-A is ocean. Literally means with poison. Because the ocean came with poison at the time of the churning of the milk ocean. There was poison came out. So Sarga, anyone know? It's a word that comes up often. If you, in his preface to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada writes that anyone who reads this Bhagavatam, and he says, including the verses and the word-to-word meanings, and the translation and the purport, that there is sure to be a God-realized soul after completing 9 cantos. So Srila Prabhupada recommends reading the verse and the meanings of it also. The Sarga often comes up. It's a repeated theme in Bhagavatam. It means creation. Tadvag visargo, that comes up in that verse, very famous verse, which Srila Prabhupada also quotes in the preface to Srimad Bhagavatam. Here, visarga means creation also, prefixed by vi for emphasis. So in this case, it refers to the literary creation, that is Srimad Bhagavatam. Generally, it's used in the meaning the creation of the universe. So Krishna, he is the creation. He's also the maintenance and the destruction. But here, specifically, is described as the creation. So creation, that means the act of creating, obviously. But it also refers to that which has been created. So we often refer to the universe, at least theistic people do, as God's creation. Right? Everything in the creation is under his control, we could say. So this gives the idea of the nature worshippers. They see nature as God. So that's one step on the path of God realization. To see everything as God. And many people, they see, especially the beauty of the creation, as a gift of God. We don't emphasize that so much in our Vaishnava theology, but especially those who think that the world is made for us to enjoy as God's gift. That's another. Oh, I got a garland. I said something good. All right. Certificate of approval. So particularly those who think that the creation is created for the enjoyment of man, which is a misunderstanding, is meant for the punishment of the jivas and the rectification. But there are many beautiful things also. All things, what is it? All things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small. All things wise and wonderful, the good Lord made them all. You heard that before? No? I learned it in school. That's the refrain. I don't remember all the rest of it. A hymn to the good Lord who loves America. God bless America. He doesn't like the enemies of America. Well, that's what everyone thinks. God loves us. So there is a problem. Well, that is also there. We find, just like Srila Prabhupada writes, that's there in the Bhagavatam, in the stage of God realization, of seeing. That's also described, one stage, the first step in God realization, seeing the universe as the Supreme Lord. And say, the mountains are the stacks of His bones. The rivers, they are His veins, and so on. The Prajapatis are His genitals. The Brahmanas are His head. The Kshatriyas, His chest. The Vaishyas, His waist, stomach area, and the Shudras, His legs. So many comparisons are given by which one may meditate on the Supreme Lord as the Virata Rupa, the great form of the universe is Krishna. And what else is there? The chirping of the birds is His musical artistry. Some birds sing very nicely. Some don't. Some of them, to hear them is, especially the crow. Wah, wah, wah. I don't see many crows around here. In Bengali, a crow is called kak. Kak, kak, nga. So, that's not very pleasant. But some birds. Which bird sings sweetly in America? Nightingale? Supposed to sing sweetly. Meadowlark. I didn't hear it clearly. Meadowlark. Yeah, the larks. They fly high in the sky and go on singing their song. Right? The lark. That's what a lark in England does. It's very, very high, flying in the sky, and they sing very sweetly. They don't look very nice. Actually, the birds that look nice, they don't often sound so nice, like the peacock or the swan. They don't have a particularly nice sound. And the famous, in India, the most famous bird for a sweet sound, and you'll often find mentioned in the Shastra also, Kokil, which, well, looks a bit like a crow, but more sleek and looks better than a crow, but sings very sweetly. But at the same time, while we see the beauty, we also, just like you may see a rustic scene and it all looks very beautiful, but we should know that there's what's going on all around us is simply violence. There's violence everywhere. That one jivo jivasya jivanam, one living being is fighting against another. The plants are struggling against each other for space and light. Well, it's a very slow struggle, but you've probably seen speeded up films of how one plant fights with another. And the creeper wraps itself around a plant and crushes it in some cases. And once I saw this one kokil in India on a telegraph line, and it was singing very sweetly, but on between one of its talons and the telegraph line on which it was sitting, it had one big insect which was flapping and flapping, and which presumably the kokil was going to eat when he got hungry, he was just keeping his breakfast there. And singing very sweetly, oblivious to the misery of this creature that was he captured. Peacocks, they're also, they're not vegetarian. That's why people keep them out. One reason people like to keep them is for snakes. If you have peacocks coming around, the snakes won't come around, because peacocks and mongooses, or mongoose, mongooses, I guess, they will kill snakes. So the peacock then, I mean, they're not totally carnivorous, but they eat all kinds of things. So nature, it looks very beautiful, but actually it's full of suffering. When we see the beautiful trees and forests, a tree means a suffering body. It's a very condemned situation to be in the body of a tree. Of course, some trees are very pious. Peepal, Ashwata, all these trees are very pious. Just on this pathway, when I come from Sundar Govinda's house, there's a tree which looks very similar to a neem, and even the leaves, when they fall, they all fall in one group together, like a neem. But not neem. Open it up and smell it. I thought maybe someone had planted that. So the whole creation, it's non-different from Krishna. Getting a little diverted here with various biological discussions, botanical discussions. He is the creation. There are various theories about how did this whole thing get here anyway? Here we are on planet Earth, a bus service which takes us round and round on a merry-go-round round the sun. Merry-go-round, what do you call that? I think it's got another name in America. You call it that? Merry-go-round? Carousel. Around the sun. We're all on a trip around the sun on this Earth planet. How did this all get here anyway? And more important, why? Why is it here? So some people conclude that, well, it was all just by chance. There was nothing, and then there was everything. It's called science. Other people say, well, everything's been here all the time, and it's just like that. And other people say, well, actually, someone made it all, which makes a lot more sense if you really want to be scientific. Just like if we were to say that, well, this building has been here forever. Did anyone see this building being built? No. So? How do you know someone made it? What's the evidence? You may say, well, there are government records, but, well, you didn't see it built. So, like, there are records in Shastra of the creation, but no one saw it. So if you really want to be scientific, you have to see it. If you didn't see it, then you don't believe it. So everything, according to the theists, and according to God Himself, was made by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there are different theories about that also. Creation ex nihilo, everything came from nothing by the grace of God. Not exactly. The Vaishnava understanding, which is the correct understanding, is that God, actually we should say Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because when we say the word God, we tend to think of, it has all these Abrahamic connotations, some nasty old guy who sits on a cloud and chucks everyone into the nether regions with no hope of ever returning. So Krishna, in his expansion form, Vishnu, we're discussing Vishnu, he generates the universes from his own body, so it's not creation out of nothing. And the material energy always exists, at least latently, within his body when it's not manifest. So it's not exactly creation out of nothing, it's creation from the energies of Krishna, which are non-different from him. Shakti, Shaktimator, Abheda. The energy and the energetic are non-different. So in this sense, the creation is understood to be Vishnu. In one sense, everything is Krishna, but in another sense, not. So understanding sensibly how everything is non-different from the Supreme, and how everything is different from Him also, this is the proper philosophic understanding. And also, with the question, what are we doing on this merry-go-round? Why is this unit? How has this come? Then the question comes, why has it come? So all this is understood by studying under proper guidance, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and related shastras such as this, Vishnu Sahasranama, and also helps us to understand this. Actually, Vishnu Sahasranam, like any other, like everything, can properly be understood through Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva Darshan. The vision by which we understand all principles, or we understand the principle of all other principles, of the inconceivable oneness and difference of everything in relation to everything else, and particularly in relationship to Krishna. So the creation is Him, in another sense is not Him. This is the antidote to the Mayavad or Advaitavad impersonalism, which is a great curse on the world, the misunderstanding that all is one. Or actually, to say all is one is not incorrect, but we should understand who that one is and how everything is one with Him and different from Him. If we say all is one, that's not incorrect. But it's not fully correct. And if we understand that statement to be definitive in itself, without the qualifier that all is one and different, without the qualifier which comes after that, and different also, then there is a great misunderstanding. But it doesn't make any sense anyway, because if you say all is one, already you have three words. So how can you say all is one? And someone is speaking it, someone is hearing it. The Advaitavadis, they say, well, when you understand, then the speaker, the hearer, and that which is spoken, they all merge into one. How? That's simply their imagination. The seer, the seen, and the act of seeing, they all become one. So, when I become self-realized, I'll become you. Yeah. You can invite someone to lunch and tell them, well, actually I'm self-realized, so I'll just sit here and eat because I realize that you and me are the same, so there's no need for you to eat also. So you can just sit here and watch me. Is it a very good proposal? Someone says, I'm hungry, I'm hungry. And you say to him, don't worry, I just had a full meal and I'm completely satisfied. And you and me are the same. So, you should be satisfied. The real problem, you're feeling hungry, is that you're not self-realized. Actually, that's true in one sense. Because for one who's self-realized, then he may not even feel hunger. But that is not a very practical philosophy for the way. If everything is all one, then there's no need to do anything because there's no need to. Why eat? If everything's all the same, then what difference does it make if the food's outside your stomach or inside your stomach? Or if, due to some inconceivable reason, you feel compelled to eat, you can just eat stool, right? Fills the belly. Got a lot of nutrients in it, no doubt. So you may say, well, these are rather gross examples, but if all is one, then why not? So this Vishnu Sahasranam, it also helps us to understand how everything is one with God and different from Him. Idang hi vishvam bhagavan ibhitara. This world is different from God, as well as being the same as Him. So the next name, Sarga. He's the creation, which means He's the creator. Many times the act is used as a noun. We have so many here in Vishnu Sahasranam names, just like Sahishnu, the quality of tolerance, forgiveness. That is the very quality, is the name of the person. It means they have that quality, or they're the source of that quality, or the exemplar of that quality. So, even in modern Indian names, there are so many like that. If you think of girls' names, Mamata, Shobha, names like that, names which mean affection, beauty. So it means the person who has that quality. So, next name, 162, Dhritatma. Dhrita means to hold or to support. And Atma has many meanings. Generally understood to mean the self, the mind, the body. These are various meanings. So he holds himself, or he is the support, the holder of all the jivas. They were all maintained by him. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahubir yo vidatati kaman. There's one living being among all the living beings who is much more powerful than them. He's in different category to them altogether, and he supplies all their necessities and fills all their desires. So, in this way, he is the supporter of all the jivas. We may think, I am working hard to support my family, but we should understand that ultimately everything comes from Krishna. One can work and get some money, and in this way, one can become an instrument in supporting one's family, but we should know that ultimately the supplier of all necessities is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, one can work very hard, but there's no guarantee that food will be there. The food may get spoiled, or the boss may not give you the money. Or one may not even be able to work hard. The ability to do so may suddenly be withdrawn. That happens often. Someone's going to work and they get a heart attack, or they suffer a slip disc or something, and then they're not able to work. Of course, you may have insurance policies and all this kind of thing. But we should know that ultimately everything comes from Krishna. We are supported by Krishna. Just a little anecdote in this connection. A few years ago in London, Britain, at Rath Yatra of Lord Jagannath, which was held there, the parade terminated at Battersea Park. It's a park in London, obviously, where there was to be a festival. So the first thing of the festival is that all the devotees take prasadam, because it's around prasadam time by the time it reaches there. So myself and Jayadvaita Swami, we came a little bit ahead of everyone else, and we were talking, and all the devotees were coming in, and one British lady came up and asked us a few questions, and then one of the commonly asked questions, well, who supports you? I mean, how do you do all that? How do you support all this? And Jayadvaita Swami said, Krishna supports us. And then she said, well, all right, but how do you get your food? And Jayadvaita Swami says, Krishna sends it, Krishna arranges it. And she was persistent, but Jayadvaita Swami is also persistent in saying, oh, Krishna sends us everything, Krishna arranges. So she went away dissatisfied with the answer. A few minutes later, actually we didn't even know that there was any arrangement, at least I didn't know there was any arrangement for prasadam. But a devotee came up to us with two plates of prasadam and said, would you like to take prasadam? See, Krishna sent. We didn't make any arrangement. We were just standing there, Krishna sent. So Krishna is supporting all the jivas. So he holds both directly in the creation is the support of all the jivas. We say the earth is the support of all living beings on this planet. But the earth is held up by Krishna. So just as Krishna is the cause of all causes, he's the support of all supports. Just like someone may say, I am maintaining my family, I'm supporting my family. But he may be able to do so because he works for a company. So you may say the company is supporting the man, just like, I don't know about in this country, but in India it's often the industrialists, they are considered to be, at least in the press it comes out like that, the social benefactors, because they've created jobs, they're employing so many people. So the businessman is supporting the government, the industrialist is supporting so many people, all his workers. And then the businessman, he's also allowed to operate and do his business thanks to the government, machinery and organization. But if we go deeper and deeper and deeper, and we're able to do so because the earth is there supporting the businessman is extracting various minerals and other ingredients from the earth. So the earth supports us, and the ultimate support is Krishna. So he literally holds the earth in orbit. There is the gravitational theory. Even if you take gravitational theory, Krishna set it all up. So Krishna holds everything in place. It's quite amazing, actually, how everything goes on so perfectly. We are told by our dear friends, the scientists, that if the earth was to go even slightly, by a thousandth of a degree out of its orbital path, toward the sun, then we'd all be burned to a crisp. And if it went a thousandth of a degree out of its orbit, away from the sun, then there'd be a new ice age. And everything would be frozen. We'd have frozen people, frozen everything. So Krishna keeps everything very nicely. Yasyagaya Brahmati Samrita Kalacha. The sun is kept in its orbit. All the planets are kept in their positions. So Dhritatma, I mean, specifically, he's the supporter of all the jivas. And to do that, he has to support all the planets and everything in existence also. So, Dhritatma, one who holds the Atma, all the jivas, also means he holds himself. Krishna is the most attractive personality for everyone, and everyone means including Krishna also. He's also attracted to himself. Atma also means that he holds the Atma, the mind. It also means the mind. So he captures the mind, or holds the mind of everyone, especially just now has been discussed about Vamanadev. So we can see this instance of how the sacrifice was going on. Bali Maharaj and Shukra, they were the important persons in that sacrifice, as Shukra was the overseeing everything, and Bali as the Yajaman, the one who on whose behalf it was being organized. But when Vamana came, he simply attracted the mind of everyone. He became the center of attention. So he captured the mind of Bali, of Shukra, of Indra, of everyone. And another meaning we can extrapolate, that Radha is the very self of Krishna. So he's holding Radha. Radha Krishna Pranayavikritya Ladine Shaktirasmad Ekatmana Vapibhuvipurade Abhedam Katauto Chaitanya Kyam Yad Adhunam Tadvayam Chaikyamaptam Radha Bhavadyuti Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Sarupa. So this verse says that Radha and Krishna are one. Ekatma. They are the one Atma. But they separate into two, or they appear to be two, for the sake of pleasure pastimes. And under the bliss potency of Krishna, they're for love pastimes, they separate. And then again, they join together. When they join together, that is called Chaitanya. And he has appeared just now in this world with the, although he is Krishna, the very form of Krishna, he has the feelings and bodily complexion of Radha. So we offer our obeisance to him. So when Krishna holds Radha very tight, and when they become completely one in all respect, then that is called Chaitanya, Chaitanya Kya. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Yes. Oh, that story, yeah. I believe Srila Prabhupada told that story. Yeah, it's about Newton, Sir Isaac Newton, who was a theist of sorts. Like, mostly the scientists who are theists, they're theists of sorts, not pure theists. So the story is there that Newton had an atheistic friend. Newton, in his home, in his study, he had a model with, I guess at that time, would have been with a, he had to turn a handle, and you'd see all the planets moving according to the understanding that they had at that time. It was a model of the universe. So his friend came and one day to his home and saw this and cranked it, and all the planets started moving. And the friend of his, who was an atheistic scientist, was astonished. I mean, that was really cutting-edge technology at the time. I said, oh, what a wonderful working model of the universe. Who made it? Newton said, no one made it. What do you mean? Well, it's just there, and that's all. Someone must have made it. No, it's just there. Well, how did it get here? Well, I don't know. I just came to my study one day, and the man became frustrated. I said, come on, what are you talking about? You're a scientific man. Why are you talking like this? Someone must have made it. And to which Newton said, well, you say this tiny, crude model of the universe you accept must have been made by someone, but the actual universe, which is far more complex and sophisticated, you don't believe that someone made it. So that's the story of Newton's model of the universe. Yeah. So, I'll just repeat that by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, we have knowledge of who is Krishna. Bhagavat tattva vijnana, scientific knowledge of the principles of Godhead, by which we can understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What this means, what it means to be God, and why Krishna is God. So by Prabhupada's grace, we have this. Has anyone written a book establishing the position of Srila Prabhupada? I think you know the answer to that. Not specifically. No. You want to write it? It would require great mercy, because he himself, well, I mean, he made it clear, the position of guru, he made clear. Philosophically, he made it clear. That's stated in Shastra. I mean, there are so many statements. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we sing every morning, Srila, on the Guru Vashtaka, 8 stanzas in praise of the Guru. So Srila Prabhupada, he elaborated on those. There's one article in the Science of Self-Realization, I believe it is, which discusses these 8 stanzas. There are many statements, especially in the beginning of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which starts with the words. Who knows what the first words of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita are? Anyone? Vande Gurun, offering obeisance to the Gurus. First word. So in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is much discussion on the position of Guru. Srila Prabhupada's specific role, I think it's not been collected together in a book. I haven't idea to do so. But I have many ideas for many books, and they're not getting written because for various reasons. Slow. My books are coming out quite slowly. Yeah. Yeah. The basis of your question is that some devotees have stated that there are some mistakes in Srila Prabhupada's books and not everything is correct. Yeah, it's a very delicate question. Because technically there are some mistakes, we'd say. And even Prabhupada himself, in the introduction to the Bhagavatam, he himself quoted that verse, that Tadvag Visarga, I was just mentioning that verse, that Abadhavyatyapi, even if imperfectly composed, he was writing about his own presentation of Bhagavatam, that his English language skills were not, his English was, according to what would be considered standard English, if we're to be very straightforward, Srila Prabhupada's English was substandard. It wasn't according to all the proper grammatical rules. But Srila Prabhupada, he stated, he quoted this verse of Bhagavatam, stating this. He said, "My attempt to present this subject matter in a foreign language will be fraught with mistakes." I'm paraphrasing, but pretty closely. "But nevertheless, persons who are purified, persons who are thoroughly honest," he used that phrase, "nevertheless it will be sung, heard, and accepted by purified persons who are thoroughly honest." Apart from that, there are some technical mistakes, just like the number, I believe Srila Prabhupada wrote, there's 640 million soldiers at Kurukshetra who were killed, whereas the actual figure is considerably less, maybe it's 64 million or 6.4 million or something like that, according to Mahabharata. Rajasuya sacrifice took place after the Battle of Kurukshetra. That appears to have been stated also by Sridhar Swami, the original commentator on Bhagavatam, although Sanatana Goswami later analyzed and saw that chronologically he, so to speak, corrected that. Because the Rajasuya sacrifice, it describes Duryodhana was there, and he wasn't there after he wasn't there after the Battle of Kurukshetra because he was already dead. He wasn't in the Rajasuya. So there are some what we could call technical errors, and it is a very delicate point to discuss it, but devotees inevitably are discussing it. So what is Srila Prabhupada's position? Well, one thing is, he's not omniscient. And as Jayadvaita Swami asked him, a very, very valuable question, which at the time devotees thought was very impertinent, but Jayadvaita Swami, it's right there in the conversations, asked this very question. He says that, well, sometimes we see that the spiritual master makes mistakes. And the devotees thought, this is, what kind of question you're asking? But Prabhupada clarified the point and said that the spiritual master's perfection is not in that he doesn't make any errors of any kind, but that he, what is exactly, I'd have to see exactly what he said, but the gist of it is that he's purely in Krishna consciousness and conveys pure Krishna consciousness. So we won't find any mistake in Srila Prabhupada's presentation of Krishna or Krishna consciousness, although there are some. What if you have to be frank, you have to call them technical errors. There are some in Srila Prabhupada's books. Even Harishori Prabhu related, because what happened was, once I'd seen one purport in the Bhagavatam, and then in the next edition I saw it wasn't there. And then I found out from Harishori Prabhu why that is. Because Srila Prabhupada, in one verse in the Bhagavatam, 8th canto, it states that the fighting between the demigods and the demons was so terrific that the blood that was generated in that fight spattered up to the region of the sun. And Prabhupada wrote in the commentary that it mentions it went up to the level of the sun, but not to the moon, and that shows that the moon is further away from the earth than the sun. And Harishori Prabhu, who was reading this before the book was published, he came to Prabhupada and he said, this is recorded in his diary. Maybe this one isn't published yet, this volume of the Transcendental Diary. He came to Prabhupada and said that, Srila Prabhupada, I think I found a mistake. He used that specific word in one of your purports. And Prabhupada asked him, what is that? And Harishori Prabhu said that, well, it says that this shows that the moon is further away than the sun, but this fight was not taking place on earth. It was taking place on the shore of the milk ocean in the heavenly planets. And he said that Prabhupada thought about it briefly, and then he said, all right, remove that. But anyway, it got published. And then it was removed later. So these are very delicate issues. And actually, there is a committee formed by the GBC with the bombastic sounding name, the Hermeneutics and Epistemology Committee. But it's an accurate name, if you know, it sounds bombastic, ostentatious, but it's an accurate name, of which I am a member. And we just had our second meeting in Los Angeles, and we're regularly on email about all these points. So, yeah, it's. Does that mean that Srila Prabhupada is mistaken in everything? We shouldn't take it like that, or that we can just interpret this way, that way, any other way. But there are some technical inaccuracies, we can say. It would be maybe fanatical not to recognize that. If we say we have to go back to the Mahabharata and rewrite it, Vyasa made a mistake. That would not be very appropriate to do. So yes, there are some technical errors. That all the implications of it, I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. Our general principle, as we sing every day before Srila Prabhupada, is Guru Mukhap, not general principle, but essential principle, is Guru Mukhap Padma Vakya Chitete Kariya Aikya Ana Kariya Mane Asha. We sing before Srila Prabhupada that the words from the lotus mouth of the Guru, this was translated by Achyutananda as emanating from, I don't like that word, they just kind of emanate as if they're, I don't like that word in relation to this, spoken by him, not just emanating. Sounds very, very vague. The words from the lotus feet of the Guru, Guru Mukha Padmava, I make one, making them one with my heart, I do not desire anything else. So that is our principle, that we accept Srila Prabhupada as the extraordinary Acharya, representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, empowered to establish and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and to present this understanding of Krishna, which is very difficult even for very pious persons to come to the level of understanding Krishna, and all the depth and the nuances of the philosophical understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada presented it to us and helped us to understand it. He himself was a great touchstone of love of God. So that we accept. That is our basic principle in understanding Srila Prabhupada. Any other principle, any deviation from that principle will be simply disaster in our spiritual life. If we think that Srila Prabhupada is a conditioned soul, then we're in hellish consciousness. But we see in, just like Sridhar Swami, Sanatan Goswami, without saying that Sridhar, he didn't say that Sridhar Swami got it wrong, but he just gave a different understanding. Or was it Jiva? One of the two, I can't remember. Maybe both of them. Jiva Goswami gave the chronology and stated that Bhagavatam is very clear, if you read a little carefully, the 10th canto of Bhagavatam is not all in chronological order. So, like that, if you study this Mayavada Shatadushini, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said this was written by Madhvacharya. It's said to be by one Gaurapada or something like that. Not Gaurapada, sir. Gaurapurnananda, who Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said this is another name of Madhvacharya. But the Madhvas, they don't accept that at all, although they accept that Madhva was the great destroyer of Mayavad, but that's not one of his works, at least as far as present scholarship, it's quite clear that's not one of his works. But it doesn't make any difference to Bhaktivinoda's being the greatly empowered representative of the personality of Godhead, because there's some technical error in something he stated. So, all this requires more research, more prayer to understand all these things, more books. We need to write so many books to establish the position of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees, His empowered devotees. What is their position? We should understand that also. So many books need to be written. So I'm very much interested in at least setting up a research, educational and research institute for all these points. That is required. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. This is the last lecture I'll be giving at ISKCON Dallas this year, it seems, as I'm scheduled to leave tomorrow morning after Mangal Arati, though there is a house program this evening in North Dallas. So I'd just like to express my happiness on being here in the shelter of Sri Sri Radha Kalachandji's lotus feet, being so nicely served. Kalachandji looks like he's being fed properly. He's looking very healthy. Not looking like underweight. So very beautiful service is going on. So thank you for receiving me. Hare Krishna. You have a question? Yes. You're coming right in close to ask it. Okay.
I wanted to finish it before I ask the question. The book gives a lot of evidence for strong and straight speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Does the book, in a way, invalidate the flattery of Prabodhananda Saraswati?
Oh, the quote of Prabodhananda Saraswati is also mentioned in the book. You didn't reach it yet. And you'll also see in the introduction that I say that a case could be also made for a milder approach using quotes from Prabhupada, although much less probably. So I recognize that also.
Like when we have book distribution, we don't go to somebody and say, you're going to die soon.
We don't generally say that. We could try it out. So that is quoted there. And you read the whole book.